This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the EPDP Small Meeting on Legal Committee Framework, taking place on Wednesday, the 30th of January, 2019 at 1400 UTC for 60 minutes. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. Christine, I have you noted on telephone only at this time. Is there anyone else? Hearing no one further, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for a recording purpose, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to Kurt Pritt. Please begin.
Good morning, everyone, or good afternoon. And in Murphy's case, good evening. For today's meeting, I think we should do two things. One is to review the feedback we got on our three questions from Bird and Bird, and you've had a chance to look at those. And actually, I'm just fishing through my backpack to pick out the hard copy so I don't have to flip back and forth on my page. So I think we need to report those findings to the rest of the team with our conclusions about what it all means. And then second, you know, we talked about three questions in our last meeting that we didn't quite form. So, but we did discuss them. So given that discussion, I took a stab at reforming them so we could review them and with the goal of getting them out pretty darn soon. And then at the end, we'll just pause and see if there are additional questions we think we need to post to legal counsel or any other business. Sorry, I have the sniffles also. Clear that up in a minute. Does anybody have any comments to that? Okay, so in concert with this agenda, I sent out a couple brief documents. The first one had to do with what I think are Anne's hands up. Hi, Anne. Ammer. That makes a lot more sense. Ammer's hands up. I'm bleary-eyed.
Oh, thanks, Kurt. This is Ammer. It's okay. I know it's really early where you are, so no worries there. I had one comment on one of the responses from Bird and Bird. I've been going through the archives because I'm not actually subscribed to the legal committee's mailing list. But specifically, there was an email that you shared with a couple of short summaries on feedback, one on the tech contact issue, the other on the legal versus natural. Looking at the response on the legal versus natural question and looking at the question itself, I'm a little concerned that the response is not as thorough as it should be, and perhaps the way the question was drafted sort of, you know, contributes to that. I was wondering if there would be an opportunity to ask Bird and Bird to expand on this response or not, specifically dealing with not just the issue of, you know, whether a registered name holder self-declares as a legal person or natural person and what the liability issues are involving that, but also on, you know, whether we have an established legal person as a registrant that includes the personal data of natural persons in the registration data. I think this is something the question itself doesn't cover, and it doesn't seem to be hinted at all in the response that I see in the mailing list archives. And I think it's something that the working group plenary did bring up on a number of occasions, and I think it would be helpful for us to receive guidance on that as well. Is getting more info on that from them something we can do? Thank you.
So let's use that as a segue to start going through these responses. So, Ammer, do you have copies of the Word doc that went out with the meeting agenda?
Yeah, Kurt, I got those off the archives for the mailing, okay. So I have those in front of me. Thanks.
All right. So, here's what I think. So the very first, so let's dive in if it's okay with everybody. And because, serendipitously, the first issue in the document called, legal committee draft, meeting draft text. I don't know why I named it that. is what our communication to the full team might be. And the first one is the legal versus natural question. So Amr, I think two things in the answer to your question. One is, in the interim, the plenary team has sort of dealt with the legal versus natural issue in that, you know, we've decided to, maintain what's, in the temp spec and put some of the harder problems that would take a longer period to solve off into phase two. So to a certain extent, our hunger for, legal versus natural is somewhat moot. And the response they did give, seemed to support our conclusion that, you know, it's a little bit of a complicated issue and, I'm sorry, I'm slowing down here. It's a little bit of a complicated issue. And, while the, registrars could mitigate liability, maybe not implement it, we got to go figure that out. So I think, the decision of the team to put some of this off to phase two was spot on because some more work is left to do. However, that work needs to be informed. And, you know, if we don't think we got everything we needed because we worded the question a little bit inartfully, which I think we all agreed at the time we released it. You know, I think that would be fine to go back to them because we have the, you know, the right resource in the right place. So let's get the complete information we need to inform the rest of the debate. So first I'd like to do two things, Amr, if it's okay with you. One is, you know, look at this wording that's here. Well, I'm looking at my laptop. Well, let me see. Yeah. So look at the wording that's here in the Adobe Connect room, or if you have it open on your laptop, and see if that's acceptable for forwarding to the group, and then talk about the additional question you would pose, and you could bring it up. And you know, thinking through this and talking at the same time, you know, we probably want to augment this response with, if the team agrees with the gist of the additional question or the additional information we'll seek, that'll inform our later work. Margie?
Hi, it's Margie. Are we now talking about the description or, because as I look at the summary that you want to send to the team, that doesn't track with the advice we received. In fact, it's a far more, I guess, negative, if you will, than what the actual advice was. And so I think it's a problem. I think we should stick with what Bird and Bird said. For example, it says would likely be liable. That is not what the language that I read said. It said could be liable. And that there's a big could be subject to liability is what they said. So I think we shouldn't be providing a summary of their language, especially when the language diverts, you know, quite substantially from what the advice was.
So would you be for, are you suggesting we reword this or just get rid of it? I think we need to summarize for the team in short order what we think the memo said.
I don't mind summarizing if the summary is accurate. But
okay.
And so that's where I have an issue. You know, obviously, you know, Bird and Bird thinks there's a liability associated with it, and they put that in writing. That should be shared with the team. But we shouldn't be mischaracterizing what they said. They said could be subject to liability. That's a big difference than would likely be liable.
Okay.
And so to the extent we're summarizing, let's be very careful on how we summarize it and you know, not, you know, we don't have to say everything they said, but we have to be careful in using the exact descriptors so we're not overstating what the advice is.
This is Christina. Can I get with you?
Sure. Margie, do you have, two sentences here. Do you have additional edits or additions you think should be made?
I'm sorry, I didn't have time to prep before this call, so I'm looking at it now. I'll rejoin the queue after I read it.
Okay, Christina, go ahead.
Thanks. I guess, with apologies, I'm a little confused as to why we're starting with a summary. It would seem to me that perhaps what we could do is just forward the response that we received kind of in its full form and ask if folks think that they need a summary. I'm just concerned that we're going to be spending a fair bit of time trying to come up with the wording of a summary that the rest of the team may not think is necessary. Thanks.
I don't know. What's everybody think? I kind of thought that was part of our duty to act, you know, part of our reason for being was to save the rest of the team some work in reading 10 pages of legal memo, but it's up to you guys too.
I mean, we could just send an email, a quick email out to the team, you know.
Thomas?
Yeah,
I understand.
A quick survey.
Thanks, Christine. Thomas?
Hi, Kurt. Thanks, Kurt. I think we should definitely send the entire memo to the list. I'm not against summarizing things, but it's not the best use of our time to try to find the right words that everyone agrees with in summarizing that. Having said that, I think what we should probably discuss for a few minutes is how far we think we should go in reporting back to the group. If my read is correct, the outcome or the result of the memo is that we should leave the text of the temporary specification as it is. So I think if the group agrees on that summary of the advice, I guess that's something that we should highlight. And I think if that is something that we can agree on, then we should probably not spend more time in discussing details on how we can exactly summarize things. Thank you.
So just state our conclusion, but not state why. This is essentially what you're saying. So in this summary, we take the third paragraph out.
Well, I'm asking that question.
Yeah.
I think, or from what I read and heard, I think the conclusion that Bert and Bert drew was that the language of the temporary specification should be maintained, and if that is the read of everyone, I guess that's the conclusion that's important for us. And then in order to avoid that the summary is biased in one way or the other, we should just refer to the entire memo, and then those who are interested in the information can go and read it.
Yeah, so I think one of the purposes for this brief summary is including you know, the two paragraphs of introduction, the two sentences of summary, and then the conclusion is to have that for our final report too. I think, you know, the work of Bird and Bird and the work of this team should be in the final report in some way. Amr?
Thanks, Kurt. This is Amr. I don't have a problem with this committee formulating conclusions based on the advice it received. But I do think it would be a better idea to send the advice as it was received from Bird and Bird, and to make sure that we archive this in the appropriate places on the working group wiki. Just as a reminder, it's not just about how we use the advice we're receiving, but advice might prove to be valuable in future efforts and discussions. So having this as a permanent reference is something that would be very valuable to both the GNSO and ICANN, as has been the case with previous legal advice received on other PEPs and in other contexts. Thank you.
Sure. And just to be really clear, I'm in no way advocating not sending the memos. So I hope you don't think that. You know, I was advocating sending the memos, sending these summaries on top with the idea that you know, the summaries or something like them would appear in the report. Margie, go ahead.
Sure. And I apologize, but I'm looking through the list now. I don't see ever getting the longer memo. I think I saw a short summary that was in the body of the email. I'm a little bit at a loss because I just don't know what the full memo says. That could be forwarded. And the other thing is I thought the whole purpose of the legal committee was to just help frame the questions. I didn't understand that what we were doing was making conclusions from the answers and sending that to the team. Those are, to me, are very different things. I mean, I guess that's fine if that's what we're going to do, but I wasn't prepared to do that on today's call for sure. I don't know that the rest of the EPDP team thought that that's what we were doing. I thought it was more of a, you know, kind of an exercise to just help frame the questions up so that the work could be sent over to the team.
So I sent an email on January 25th, where the email's not attached, shit, where the document's not attached to it because I just forwarded it. So Margie,
to answer your question, I never saw an attachment. I just saw the short summary that was in the body. It looks like Thomas is referencing what happened in the CCWG. It sounds like they just forwarded the output to the team. I think that's probably best in light of all the work we have to do. Because I assume we'll have to have another call then to analyze the 10-page memo to the conclusions to send to the team, and we all know our current workload that might be hard to do. So I don't know. It's just my suggestion. I could go either way, but I would need more time to be able to really dig into the analysis.
Okay. I'm just looking at it.
Kurt, this is Amar. If I can jump in just to also add that the memo that was shared in the Adobe Connect room last week, which was focused on using 6.1b as a legal basis, I don't believe that was shared at all either. I downloaded it directly from the Adobe Connect room, but I never found it in the archives, so that might be another document that we might want to circulate. Thank you.
So here is a resend. So everybody have those. So in the future, when I write to, we send questions to Bird and Bird, we'll make sure the whole team's copied on the response from them directly. So I have a question for the team. Does the team have all three legal memos now? There was one from Ruth and these two from Ebe.
Kurt, this is Amr. Was the one from Ruth circulated?
Well, I feel sure it was. Let me find it. Yeah, so that was sent. On January 23rd, so that was about 5:53 a.m. my time, so that would be like 13:53 UTC on January 23rd, but I'll send it again. So I feel, first of all, I apologize, but second of all, I feel sort of strongly that given the amount of work that the rest of the team has to do, and given the fact that we've paid closer attention to these questions than others have, that we should provide our takeaway from the legal memo. So that those that choose not to read the whole thing have some sense and can describe, you know, at least the legal team's opinion of what that is. And I think our work in that way would help the team's work because it would lead with a sort of conclusion if we can agree to one. So with that, Margie, I made the one change that I appreciate on the paragraph descriptor, but please, read the memos and, look at the shorthand descriptions of them that we might or might not send to the team, and please reevaluate whether, you think the thought I just expressed is a good one or not. We can go either way. I'd like to, you know, obviously I'd like to get some response out to the team. I think since we're not ready to send a response, you know, our gist of what we think the legal responses are right away, what I would recommend is that we send the full responses out now so that the whole team has them because we've had them for a few days now, or I have anyway. And say there will, if it's agreeable to you guys, we'll follow with, summary and conclusion. Emily?
Thanks, Kurt. Hello, everybody. Thanks for resending the memo. 20 minutes really confused what we were talking about. One of the risks that I see in having a bunch of lawyers trying to summarise the work of another lawyer is all pitching for a summary that reflects our own interpretation, and probably the best way to cut through that and also to save time would be to ask Bird and Bird to prepare a couple of lines summary to be included in the final report, so it's their summary of their advice. Our job isn't to second guess or improve upon the advice that's been commissioned on behalf of the group, but just to help to hone the questions and to sit in the middle as intermediaries, as I understand it. So that's my suggestion of a possible way forward. Thanks.
So you're a little bit quieter than you want to be. Was your advice that we would append the full memo to our final report, which I thought we would probably do anyway, but then just leave it at that and refer to it? Or I didn't quite get the last bit.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, so my suggestion is that we ask Bird and Bird for a summary of their advice for insertion in the final report, rather than trying to summarise it ourselves.
Okay, all right.
We have prepared the advice, prepared a summary, and we don't have any risk of all of us from our various stakeholder backgrounds trying to improve upon or second guess or interpret the advice that we've already paid for, or that ICANN has already kindly paid for.
Okay, if everybody's okay with that. The reason I did call that was that, Bird and Bird did essentially take the questions from the initial report verbatim, with some background from us that they received that Ruth received during our meeting in Toronto, but not really, a full background. And so to a certain extent, their summaries are a little bit off from what we need. And I think that's where Amr was starting the phone call. And so that's why I thought it'd be helpful to the team to take the parts of the report that were more germane to, what we were doing. But, they've already furnished that summary in their email, so we could use that. Right, and so I agree with Amr.
This is Christina. Sorry, I'm only on the phone. I support that path forward. The only thing that I would perhaps suggest that we consider, and I'm just kind of harking back to my days in private practice, is that we may want to let Bird and Bird know that, thank you very much for the work product. Here's what we're planning to do. The full memo will be included as part of the final report. Your summary email will be included, in the text of the final report. And just make sure that in light of that, because when they sent that email, they may not have appreciated, like, oh my gosh, it's going to be published.
Yep.
And I think it's really only fair to give them, three or four days to, if they want to come back and clean it up, refine it, whatever, that they have the chance to do that.
Yeah, good idea. I'm sure they're probably aware of it, but it behooves us to do that. That's the right thing to do. Thanks. So I intended to spend the first half of the meeting on these replies and getting them honed up. So we're right on time. All right. Let's turn then to, unless there's any other comments about that, let me look at the chat. I just want to pause for 1 second. I see Dan's on the phone. Welcome, Dan. Do you know of any other briefings that, it's a topic in the chat. Do you know of any other briefings that Ruth got as far as her indoctrination into this this effort.
Hey, Kirk. Good morning. Let me catch up on the chat, and I might need to come back and reply in writing on that. Thanks.
Okay. Yeah, so essentially Thomas asked if there were any other briefings of Ruth. You can read it. And, the one briefing we gave her was in our legal team meeting. And then, as Barry pointed out, we gave her the Tom Speck in the initial report. So if you could answer that like sometime during the call, if there were any in the hiring process or anything like that.
Yeah, but I'm not sure I can do it during the call. I need to consult with my colleagues.
Oh, okay.
Thanks.
All right, then let's turn to the questions that we might pose. And Christina, did you provide some edits to those?
Yeah, I did. I went into the Google Doc and made some suggestions directly in there. Unfortunately, I'm still only on the phone, and I'm not going to be able to pull that up.
Okay, could you? That's great. Well, that's great that you did that. So, could Caitlin, could you or Barry put the link to the Google Doc in the chat so everybody can easily find it, and then we'll take a look at Christine's edits. And, the questions in Christine's edits. Thanks. So Christina took my rambling folksy kind of memo and turned them into legal questions, which is a good thing. So to take each of these questions in order, and if anybody opines, maybe we can post those in a cleaner version so they're easily said. So the introduction to the first question, and I'll call on Hadi and Margie in a second, is that, I don't want to take too long, but near the close of our last meeting, Thomas mentioned, and I think I wrote this in my email, that Thomas mentioned that he thought there was agreement that city names were personal data, and so the only inquiry is whether there was a legal basis or not for disclosing that data. And I was of the opinion after Toronto that the team wasn't fully closed on that thought based on the sorts of questions that were being asked. And so I decided to keep a bifurcated question. One is the city field properly filled out personal data? And two is, if it is, can there be a legal basis for disclosing that? Hadia and then Margie?
So hello. With regard to the city, so as you said, personal data or personally identifiable information can be divided into two categories. linked information and linkable info. And linked information, it's obvious, it's like the full name, the home address, the email, social security, that kind of stuff. And linkable information is information that, when combined with other pieces of information, leads to the person being identified. And by definition, the country, the city, the state, the postal code, those are all linkable information. So the city in itself is not personal data, but maybe when linked with other pieces of data, could be personal data. And I think this is what the question should reflect. So the question actually should look at the city field in combination with the other fields provided by the registered name holder. And we should look at the whole set of data that is being disclosed. And if this set of data, and if within this set of data the city is considered a personal data, then yes, of course it should be redacted. But if within this set of data it's not personal data, then it should not. So I think the question should reflect that, and that we should look at the whole set of data and not only at this particular field. Thank you.
Thanks, Hadia. And the way I thought of that was that the city field, so take our current list of unredacted data that's in the initial report, add city name to that, and then ask if that becomes personal data. Margie?
Actually, Hadia said a lot of the things I was going to say. That's exactly right, Kurt. We need to say, in the context of seeing these fields, you know, and you list the field, is the right term personal data or personally identifiable data? Because we seem to use, you know, we often refer to PII, which is personally identifiable data, which is different than what we see here.
One meeting, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Sure, you can answer in a minute. The other thing is, I think using the word unconsented seems confusing to me. We haven't really been talking about consent. So I would just, you know, I think we want to ask, what are the risks of, you know, publishing the city, you know, in combination with because that's really what we're trying to get at, right? We need to understand what the risks are. And then that helps inform our determination as to whether or not it should be redacted. Thank you.
Thanks. I remember one meeting I practiced in front of the mirror saying personally identifiable information and used that for a good portion of one of our calls. And in the middle, Stephanie Perrin just cut me off and told me that's the wrong term of art. It's personal data. So ever since then, I've used personal data. I saw this as kind of a two-step question. If you read the original version, is it personal data? And then if it is there, a legal basis for publishing it? Thomas?
Thanks, Kurt. If memory doesn't fail me, what we're discussing to disclose potentially is the combination of the city name, the province, and country. So maybe we can frame the question more generally and just ask whether there are any legal issues if the registered name holder's city data element is publicized in combination with the province and city, province and country, excuse me. I guess that would be sufficient information for Ruth to start working on whether there are legal issues and associated risks with the publication of that data element. And let me just clarify, the term in the GDPR that is used is personal data. That is data that can be related to an individual. So I think that the meaning of PII and personal data is not far apart, but PII is what's used in other jurisdictions. And also, we discussed at the very outset, processing of data is a very broad redefinition in GDPR that includes the alteration of data and potentially the publication. So if we take the data set that was received by the registrar from the registered name holder and alter that, i.e. create a subset, that itself is a processing activity. And the publication thereof is an additional processing activity. And I guess that's what Ruth will deduct from our open question, if we use my proposal, is to find ways whether there is, or to determine whether there is a legal basis and rationale for these processing activities. And I think if we get that, I think we get the response that that we are looking for. Thank you.
Thanks, Thomas. That was good. So I want to put up, I agree with all of that. And, but I wonder if we need to put a little finer point on it. So, because in our call, we talked about, you know, a specific benefit for, publishing the city name. And that was to resolve, jurisdictional issues in some cases where the state name was not sufficient. And so is it possible for us to say or ask whether that benefit, if we can word it properly, you know, satisfies the 6.1F balancing test? Or do we have to ask the, I'm concerned if we ask the second part of the question about a legal basis in a general way, we'll get a sort of general answer back. Amar?
Well, thanks, Kirk. This is Amar. I think your question kind of segues into what I wanted to raise, and I did raise this during last week's call. And to begin, I think I'd just like to say that I agree with all the comments were made, Hadia, Margie, yourself, and Thomas. And a way to deal with one thought, at least, in dealing with your question, Kurt, is to clarify in the question that we are considering both publication of this data element in the context of all the other data elements that are collected and processed, as well as the disclosure. There might very well be different legal bases for disclosure of this data. You know, you mentioned in determining a legal jurisdiction where a certain action needs to be taken. So if there's a legal basis to disclose this data to a third party, that might not be the same thing as publishing it. You know, the publication might require a different legal basis. So in the question itself, we might want to mention both, because right now it only mentions disclosure. And of course a rationale for the context of each, you know, publication versus disclosure should be provided in order to get the most thorough response possible. Thanks.
Thanks. And so to be clear, I think the question is about, you know, publication in the WHOIS database, right? So this is where we publish the city name for every registrant. So that's right. Well, let me look at the previous version of the question. Yeah, so in the previous version, it just said, is it personal data? So, Thomas, could you, let's try to capture Thomas's characterization exactly. Do you have the wherewithal to restate it?
I guess the language that I proposed was, are there any concerns or issues with the publication of the city name, province, and country of the registered name owner?
Okay, and then if there, so the answer to that question is either no or yes, and if it's yes, that to me that means that it's personal data that should not be published unless there's a legal basis for it. Is that correct?
Correct. Correct. I mean, we can certainly unfold the question more and say, you know, whether there are any issues with the publication of these three data elements without asking the registered name for his or her consent. I mean, that's the baseline, I guess, that we're trying to establish. Because certainly if there are issues, so if Bruce says, yes, there are issues, then we need to work on other options possibly. You know, consent-based processing for publication would still be legally feasible, whether it's desirable from a policy perspective or feasible from a technical perspective. That's a different question. If you ask me, I would keep it as simple as possible, and then await the response and move from there.
Well, then, I anticipate a second round of questions then. Recalling the conversation in Toronto, more than one person raised the issue that, you know, it would be helpful if this information was published, because where a case was being built against a registrant, the city name provided helpful information in settling jurisdiction. And to me, that sort of comment goes on to the next step, saying that, you know, that comment does not go to whether city name is personal data. That comment goes to the legitimate basis for publication of that information. There's a legitimate basis that overcomes the privacy rights of the individuals, all the individual registrants, and not having their city name published. And so can we not, and that was, you know, can we not use that from the transcript in Toronto to build the second part of our question that, you know, that we'd be anticipating if we just asked the first question. You know, I had written, just to take up some dead air time, you know, I had written, if the answer to the above is yes, that it is personal data, is there a lawful basis for publishing a subset of the data submitted by the registered name holder that includes the city name where the legitimate interest of those pursuing claims can determine jurisdictional issues prior to asserting the claim, and that overcomes the rights of all registrants in not having their personal data published. So is it reasonable to ask that as the second part of the question, or is that too narrow? Thanks, Amr. Amr, go ahead. Sorry.
Thanks, Kurt. This is Amr. I think Margie made a good point in the chat. You know, we could ask whether there is a legal basis or not. But I think a good follow-up question would be to ask what the risks of disclosure or publication would be in those scenarios. Just to get a broader and more thorough understanding of what we're dealing with when we're making policy recommendations. Thanks.
Okay. All right, so I haven't been tremendously successful at writing these things up. Can somebody, maybe Amr, Thomas, and Margie take the pen on this and see if, you know, one of you bang out a question and the other two review it or something like that and bring that around. Hadia?
So actually, I do think what you, the original question that you put is fine with its two parts. So I don't know actually what's the problem with them. So the first one asks about the publication and the other one follows up. So I don't know, where's the problem in the questions that you drafted? I actually agree with it.
All right, let's put, I'm sorry, I take too much time in these meetings and I apologize. Let's put that question up. I think, you know, Christina's wording, a lot more professionally done than mine. So we would, refine, you know, to the extent we use any of this, I would refine that. But, starting with, therefore, which is the third paragraph down, that's the question. So, I don't know. I was on mute, unfortunately, but you've had plenty of time to read this. I would amend the first question along Thomas's lines and say, if the city name, what are the risks associated with adding the city name? You know, if the city name is added to the current list for data, what are the risks, involved rather than just asking the yes or no question? I think like Thomas and Margie said, and then the second question is really taken from the transcript in Toronto. I would, you know, probably eliminate the parenthetical in the first question along the lines that Hadia suggested. add a plus one to what Thomas suggested, which was what? Oh, the risk thing.
Which is basically the first question you put, but he actually rephrased it.
Right. Yeah, I know. So can I have a comment? So if we rephrase the first part of this, are we comfortable with this sort of bifurcated question, or would we rather go with the type of question Christine wrote, changing disclosure to publication? Either is fine. Our goal, I think, should be to try to get the most precise answer we can. Yes, Thomas, publication or what? Yes, Haria.
So we did agree that we are going to ask about the risks of publication. So we are essentially also mentioning publication.
Right. And how are we with the second question? Is there agreement to publish that? All right, so what I'm going to do is, since we've lost gas on this, I'm going to rewrite this question, put it to the group in email, and, we'll wait 24 hours before sending it out. Could you, quickly put up Christina's, clean version of the question about accuracy? Is question number two. So in my question, I really cut and pasted the comments from this team, so I appreciate that Christine put this together more succinctly. I think it requires does it require a question at the end of it? We're reading question two. Can somebody comment, or Christine, can you perhaps add what the coup de grace is on number two, how we would close it out? Christina had to drop. The things we got answers on were the legal versus natural distinction. The legal bases, 6F versus 61B, and the technical contact. and the need for notification. So we haven't received an answer on accuracy. Well, Margie, I think that's the question we're trying to answer. Is that how you're, if you can, Margie, speak up. Is that your rewording of the question?
Okay. Yes, sorry. I was looking at the question. I was looking at the question and trying to find the question, and I think that's the question that we've been trying to understand. Is the accuracy requirement limited to corrections requested by the data subject, or is it a broader, you know, requirement? That's really the question.
Yeah.
And I thought we already had in the memo that you circulated this morning some analysis there, but perhaps she wasn't. I don't think she specifically answered that question. So that's I understand where the divergence is on our team.
Yeah. Okay. So we could append that to Christina's background. Caitlin, yeah, I'm trying to cut and paste this out of the chat, but how do you go ahead in a second? So Thomas is suggesting that I don't know. So, Thomas, your suggestion might be, a second sentence maybe. You know, Christina started off with a broad statement about examining the RAA, and then you're saying what you're citing is an example of how the RAA might be amended. Okay. So there's general support for Thomas's question. Hadia?
Okay, so Christina's question, the second part is clear. It says others maintain that the article, and it says about accuracy recording, maintaining, and updating the information. So the second part is clear, but the first part, no, it's not, because it says examine the accreditation agreement and put the required changes. So what does this actually mean if we put it as a question? Because they don't know actually what the agreement contains, and they don't know actually what kind of changes are proposed. So I think the first part of the question is too broad and doesn't say anything. It's just like an introduction, but doesn't really say anything. So I'm not sure how we can actually modify this first part.
Excuse me. Yeah, I think... Excuse me.
So it's basically we have only the second part of the question, which requires a legal answer. But the first part, no, because they don't know what are the requirements of the accreditation agreement, and they don't know what kind of possible changes we are thinking of.
Yeah, so I think that's right, and that's why I think Thomas's sentence improves that. So I think everybody on this call is typed the same thing into chat, and so we want to use Thomas's sentence to either clarify the first sentence or in lieu of the first sentence. And then so then I kind of think we're done with question two. And I'll beg your indulgence to take a few more minutes of time and give Amr the floor on question three. I think this was his thought. And Amr, does this adequately describe this question adequately, describe your concern and ask the question in the right way.
Yeah, thanks, Kurt. This is Amr. Excuse me. I think the question adequately captures my concern or what I'm trying to ask, basically. Christina, I think, did a good job of editing it. But, you know, reading the question, it makes sense to me just because I've been involved with the EPDP from the get-go and we've had these discussions. We've gone over the EDPB guidance on territorial scope. It probably makes sense to members of this legal committee and might make sense to the EPDP team at large, but I wonder if we need to give more information to Bird and Bird when we're asking this question. I suspect that we do. Right now we're assuming that ICANN has stable establishment. I'm speaking for myself, I'm making that assumption based on what I've seen in the EDPB guidance. So it might be helpful to point out why we suspect ICANN does have stable establishments within the EU. That might be a question in itself, you know, whether Bird and Bird agree that these stable establishments are truly or in fact stable establishments. And then move on to asking the rest of the question. I think that might be helpful, and I wouldn't mind taking a stab at you know, rewriting this a little. If I agree with my assumptions. Thank you.
Yeah, so I'll ask the group what they think of that. I agree, and maybe, you know, we ask the question in two ways. You know, we could point to ICANN's establishments, but then we might ask what the minimum requirements are for me, what, you know, that term of art, stable establishment. We could ask that, generally. So where we are, and thanks for staying over, is that the staff and I will reword question one to make the first part of the question more general and make sure we're focused on publication in the first part of the question. And then make sure we're focused on disclosure in the second part of the question. For the second question, we'll ask, ask Thomas's intervention for the first part of the question. We'll add that sentence to what's there, and I think Margie had a replacement for the second part of the question, so we'll use that. And then on the third question, we'll look for a amendment from Amr. So if we could. You know, on the first two questions, we'll turn those around to the legal team today. On the third question, we'll look for input from Amr. We'll look for a pretty fast turnaround from the group as to whether that those questions are acceptable or not. In the meantime, we'll draft another memo for the whole team that will attach the legal memos we receive. And in the cover email, we'll include the summary of each of the questions that was provided by Bird and Bird, and ask the team to review those, and then without further direction or coaxing, and then we'll also write back to Bird and Bird and. First, establish a practice. There's been no emails going back and forth between us. Ruth sent the first memo back, and I didn't respond, and Gabe sent the second two back, and I wrote back and said, well, you know, forwarded these on immediately. But we'll establish a practice of having us all on the CC list for those communications. And anyway, we'll write to Bird and Bird and say, you know, we're planning to use the summary language. It's likely it'll be used in our final report. And so wanted to give you the opportunity to amend that language in the event that you think it's necessary. So that's the summation. Does anybody else, especially on the staff side, anybody else have any comments or questions? Great. Well, thanks very much, everybody. Have a great day. I'll talk to you soon.
And once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.